The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, When Your Ambition Holds You Back, How to Know When to Stop. This article was written by Raya Khaled on November 3rd. I have consistently held a high degree of ambition, maybe too much. As a student, I figured that accomplishment could replace attention and recognition. Straight A's, getting a leadership role, winning an award, every ounce of accomplishment translated into reassurance I was enough. I found fulfillment in being the child who could do it all. I could stay up late to work on a project, and I could even force myself to wake up early to work on another project. This became my identity, the multitasker, the person who never says no. That feeling started to fade away after a while when I noticed that I was no longer on the pursuit of passion, but merely validation. I kept adding one more thing to my plate, always thinking that, surely, the next achievement would bring forth satisfaction or wholeness. Unfortunately, it never did. The happiness I got from each accomplishment quickly diminished. Each accomplishment on the quest only made me want just one more. I found myself on a quest for all of this success and literally forgot how to enjoy what it was that I was doing. When ambition is healthy, it can be like a fire, energizing you to be your best. Achievement as motivation ultimately becomes an obsession that burns everything around it, you included. The slow burn of burnout. Burnout doesn't occur like an explosion. It comes in gradually. It begins when you say you can't take a break yet, that just after this deadline, just after this exam, just after this event, you'll slow down. But the after never comes. For me, burnout meant always feeling exhausted while trying to be productive. I was always occupied, but I wasn't fully there for anything. I would start working on my computer in the morning, and my chest would tighten. Not from being stressed, but from emptiness. I didn't know who I was without the constant rush of busyness. But I continued. Stopping would mean facing a little fear that I might not be capable like I always thought, that maybe all the things I was doing just weren't enough. That is the cruel trick of burnout. It makes you feel like you can't slow down, even when your body is begging you to do it. It took me a long time to learn that exhaustion is not evidence of commitment. It's evidence of imbalance. When high standards become harmful. Ambition can often masquerade as perfection. I convinced myself that I simply held myself to a higher standard, that I wanted to be proud of my work. But there is a thin line between doing your best and a feeling that you could have done more, or it could have been better. I used to rewrite essays or papers 3 or 4 times. I would reread emails before hitting send, and think deeply before agreeing or declining an invitation to some event or opportunity in fear of missing out or disappointing someone. The more I did, the less joy I had in the exercise or task, whatever it was. Everything was a checklist, a product to be produced, a performance. That is when I began to think, perfectionism is not the loving embrace of excellence. Perfectionism is a fear of inadequacy. Perfectionism is a belief that unless everything is perfect, you are unworthy of existence. That thought will wear you out faster than any all-nighter at home. Learning to pause without apology. The first time I refused something, I felt I was letting everyone and everything down. But over time, I began to realize that to say no to something meant I was saying yes to something, which was my mental health, my joy, or my peace. Resting used to fill me with guilt. I'd sit on the couch while my mind turned over everything I should be doing. And slowly but surely, I learned that productivity is not equivalent to purpose. Taking a time out for yourself is not being selfish. It is self-preservation. Now, I try to listen to myself before I reach that breaking point. If I am motivated by fear or guilt, I have learned that it is not true motivation. It is pressure. And pressure without pause to rest/evaluate yourself is always going to lead to burnout. How to find balance before it breaks you. Achieving balance is not an easy feat, especially if you are accustomed to overextending yourself. It takes time to get used to and feel good about it, as it may feel uncomfortable at first. You may even feel like you're falling behind. But balance keeps ambition from turning into self-destruction. This is what helped me find balance. 1. Redefine success. Success isn't about your capacity to do more. It's about being personally fulfilled. For a long time, I defined success as being the best at everything I did. More in charge and take on more, raising expectations of myself until I could barely keep up with my own personal definition of success. In time, I realized success could look softer. It could be having room to prioritize time with loved ones, sleeping well at night, or feeling calm when I opened my eyes in the morning. I began to realize that sometimes success is about finishing something important, not necessarily everything. Your definition of success can change, and it is fine if it does. It should. 2. Treat rest like you planned for it. We treat rest as a luxury, but it is a necessity. When we are ambitious, resting feels forced and unnatural. It feels as though you are losing momentum. Burnout doesn't occur because you are weak. Burnout occurs when you ignore what your body and soul need until it eventually gives in. Rest is not the same as going backwards and losing your momentum. It is intended to preserve your momentum. Because so many productive people refuse to rest, they burn out faster. You should develop the habit of resting before you get to this stage. Rest can mean scheduling a day off after a crazy week or allowing yourself to just not feel guilty about just sitting because you are not doing anything. Rest is not wasted time. It fosters recovery. Without a chance to recuperate, anything has potential to run out of energy, even the most get-it-done person. 3. Set emotional boundaries with your goals. goals require a level of attention, but are not a part of your identity. I have wrestled with my self-worth being tied to the outcomes I produce. When I succeed, I feel good about myself. And when I fail, not so much. When you live in a delicate situation, it generally indicates that your self-worth is tied to something you are not always able to control. I often remind myself these days that I am not my achievements. If I fail, my self-worth does not disappear. While if I do accomplish something, my self-worth does not increase either. The space of creating a detachment between who you are and what you accomplish frees up space to breathe for yourself and gives you the freedom to fail while still feeling whole. 4. Prioritize joy, not just progress. There is something so wonderfully healing about doing things for the sake of enjoyment. It probably is not productive productivity, but joy and motivation are far more tied to creativity and purpose than any productivity checklist you can ever come up with. Bake for the joy of baking. Write for the enjoyment of writing. Walk simply because you are enjoying the walk. Accomplishments without joy are just challenges. As soon as laughter moments are added to your life, your goals become lightweight. Your goals become the actual agent lifting you, as opposed to the weight pulling you down. 5. Surround yourself with people who don't glorify exhaustion. When those around you are engrossed in work, it becomes easy to consider overworking to be the social norm. I used to feel bad for resting while my friends or colleagues continued working. And in artificial social proof, my mind, I falsely considered a lazy state to be associated with resting. But being busy should never be viewed as a badge of honor. It should serve as a warning. Be with people who affirm that peace is just as important as pace. The right people will be just as excited for you to rest as they will celebrate any win. And really, when you do start to find resting as a badge of honor, it will all make sense that balance has never been the antithesis of ambition. But balance is what allows you to accomplish what you set out to accomplish. The strength in stopping. I still have big dreams. I still make lists, plan goals, and try to hold myself accountable for doing my best. But I'm learning that ambition is meant to empower, not to defeat. It is supposed to provide anticipation, not serve as something to recover from. And the truth is, you cannot do it all. That is not failure. It is liberty. You do not have to justify your right to rest. You do not have to earn your place by being depleted. Ambition is meant to illuminate your way forward. It is not meant to burn you. Our next article from TeenVogue.com, Why Rocky Horror Still Attracts Young Queer People 50 Years After Release. This article was written by Skyly Alvarez on November 3rd. When discussing what exactly makes Rocky Horror Picture Show a cult classic, several points come to mind. It was a box office bust, met with critique and confusion en masse, that eventually found its audience in Manhattan's midnight movie scene. First at the Waverly Theater, then in neighboring counties, It slowly attracted more and more crowds of riffraffs and magentas, the film's alien servant siblings, straight-laced Brads and Janets, and, of course, Frankenfurters in full-face glam who shouted back at the screen. Soon enough, devotees with an affinity for wayward, so bad it gets good charm took to the stage and made a routine out of the debauched sing-along, or so the legend goes. Few films have achieved near-spiritual status, and even fewer can say they're the longest-running theatrical release of all time. But Rocky Horror checks all those boxes, however messily, that to consider it a film, let alone a cult classic film, seems an understatement. But now, 50 years since its initial theatrical release, the phenomenon and universe time warping all around it continues drawing in new generations of fans, freaks, baby gays, and first-time attendees, often marked virgins with a lipsticked V to the forehead upon arrival. It's a tradition so far from traditional, a rite of passage that to some feels profane, but to so many others is scripture. Lots of modern fandoms have cult followings, but Rocky is very unique in that it's 50 years old. But that's what people crave. They want that connection, that feeling of being a fan and being a part of a community that comes from a piece of media. University of Georgia College student Valor Lakas, 19, tells Teen Vogue. The sophomore was first introduced to the film at just 9 years old, all thanks to their father, who used to attend shadow cast showings while he was in college. In full circle nature, Lakas is now in their own university's long-standing student production, much to their family's thrill. To Lakas, Rocky Horror finds that perfectly imperfect blend of cinema and theater, and its appeal lies in an absolute destruction of any sort of fourth wall. In the movie, characters such as Dr. Everett V. Scott, the UFO-inspecting government official, often address the audience, which is only amplified in the call and repeat of shadow performances. After all, the movie's earliest iteration was the Rocky Horror Show, a musical staged by the film's director and original riffraff, Richard O'Brien, in London circa 1973, just 2 years before the picture show came to be. Whether fate or predisposition, Rocky Horror's roots are in live performance, as it finds its very charm and spirit in continual reinvention. The watcher is part performer, the spectacle the spectator, and what transpires on stage never stays there. Whether on the screen or in the spotlight, power reversals are everywhere. As attendees dance the time warp and don party hats in celebration of Rocky's birth date, and as Frankenfurter deceptively seduces Janet, then Brad, into digression. The very nature of film is spun around and cracked open, and through those cracks of logic comes the creative liberty to stitch them back up as one sees fit. It just exists as DIY, and that is all it ever has been, from the movie to every shadow cast and every midnight screening, says Anna Campbell, 29, founding member of queer zine Dykes and Dolls. According to the topsy-turvy world of Rocky Horror, everyone's a weirdo alien, and normalcy is seemingly the scariest thing one might be. It's a carnival that all are invited to attend, if they dare. Performer Malaya Kimberly's, 24, The Taste of Transylvania, came in the form of the Rocky Horror Glee Show. But what really sold them was a shadow performance they saw as a teen in their hometown with a body-diverse cast the movie lacks. They were queer, flamboyant, and strange, Kimberly recalls. I'm high femme and didn't realize that then, but this castle where everybody looks really freaky and dances, that's where I wanted to be. Kimberly, who directed their first Rocky Horror production this season alongside Campbell, gave it their own spin with an all-transgender cast of friends and familiar faces from their scene in Brooklyn. It's not something that can be turned into a clean-cut, PC-updated version. It is as it stands, and the only thing you can do is get as freaky as possible with it, they add, noting where the film's reboot and spin-offs fall flat were their attempts at sanitizing and making it make sense. In Rocky Horror, nothing is too precious, and most everything is up for interpretation. It is that wide range of interpretations, however, that may leave other users uneased, and understandably so. For Malaya's producer and star Frankenfurter, Jer Wenick, 24, her first watch was full of fear and apprehension. I was like, Frank is scary. Nothing about this feels like it's for me. As I sort of moved from those views when I was younger and came into myself as a trans person, I was able to return to Rocky Horror when Malaya brought it to me. She continues, stressing just how important it is for fans to continue creating new ways of translating the original film to reflect contemporary experiences of queerness, while still keeping in its initial do-it-yourself spirit. Transsexual Transylvania, for me, is in my living room watching The Summer I Turned Pretty, the comedian adds with a smile. It really is so deeply entwined with the struggles queer people were facing 50 years ago, and a lot of those things are feeling relevant right now, Kimberly elaborates. She likens Rocky Horror to a sort of queer Bible, a modern-day Shakespearean tale that lives on through devotees who care enough to keep it breathing and transforming. The ways the queer community has truly embraced this movie has changed how it would be seen in isolation. I don't even think you can talk about Rocky as just a film without the shadow cast and midnight showings, Laika says, certainly speaking from experience. The production was the first activity they got involved with on campus as a freshman, and now, 1 year later, they couldn't imagine their college experience without it as an anchor. It's really been this queer community I never had growing up. Whether at a midnight floor show, shadow performance, or some future reimagining, there's value in embracing a bit of nonsense. So we may do the time warp again, again, and always forward. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. I tried studying right before I went to bed. Surprisingly, it improved my grades. This article was written by Gabriella Capaldo on October 12th. Studying before going to bed might sound strange. We often think our brains are tired and need their own moments to rest. And that's true, your brain does need rest. But actually, studying before bed can be great for your memory, and here's why. The why behind it. When we go to sleep, the brain reorganizes everything we've learned during the day. It strengthens important memories and clears out unnecessary information. In short, while you sleep, Your brain is busy sorting and reinforcing what you've learned. So, if you study before bed, the information you review will be fresh, and your brain will store it more effectively. If you study in the morning and don't review your notes again, you'll probably forget most of it after a few hours. This is called the forgetting curve. Before bed, there are no more interruptions, such as talking or distractions, so your memories have a better chance of staying intact. Still, it's important not to overdo it. What you shouldn't do. Of course, your brain still needs rest. That means if you study too late or for too long, fatigue will stop your brain from recording information properly. And if you study something stressful, like a test for the next day, your brain might keep thinking about it instead of relaxing and falling asleep. My experience. Personally, I tend to go to bed late and take about an hour to actually get up after my alarm. So when I told myself I'd study in the morning, well, it was usually too late. That's when I decided to study in the evening, and it really worked. I'd finish dinner around 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m., then get ready for bed and start studying from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. I reread my notes, did some exercises, and reviewed the parts I didn't understand to make sure everything was clear. But if I started feeling tired after 20 minutes, I'd stop right away. I didn't want to push myself too hard. With this method, I got better grades and better sleep. Not having to stress about studying in the morning was a huge relief. Tips. 1. To avoid overworking yourself, try the Pomodoro technique. Study for 25 minutes, then take a 5-minute break, and repeat. It helps your brain breathe. 2. Stop working after 10 p.m. The hours before midnight are the most important for good sleep. 3. Focus on reviewing rather than learning something new. Nighttime is for consolidating what you already know. 4. Avoid screens before bed. They're bad for both your sleep and your concentration. Conclusion. In conclusion, studying before bed is great for your memory, but moderation is key. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-919-919.